I'm waiting for the noise to simmer down, but it doesn't seem to be simmering down. I'll pretend it's not simmering. We have very interesting rituals in the Hare Krishna movement. Buy a new house, and you invite a special qualified person to come and light a fire in the middle of your living room and say some special sounds that makes it nice. Dedicate the house to some higher purpose. Just before coming here to Detroit, I was in St. Louis, and in St. Louis, the topic for this evening fits very much, very nicely into the topic that we were discussing in St. Louis, so I'll just make that connection. Some of you may be aware, some of you may not be aware, that there's a revival, a renewed interest in the topic of Varnashram. I become recently, in the past year and a half or so, interested in that topic. In part because it seems that there are some persons that understand it in practical terms, like what it is and how to do it. Without the history behind that, there are some events that led to that interest. I won't say it's the negative first. For maybe 20 years, I had no interest, in part because nobody seemed to understand what it was, and no one seemed to be doing anything about it, other than sharing their views on what they thought it was, and out of others disagreeing with them, and it just wasn't going anywhere, so I wasn't really so interested in the topic. One of those persons that inspired my interest in the topic is Shivra Maharaj, in part because they're practically not only at the farm, but at least they're undergoing the beginning attempt to contemplate how to apply, not claiming that they have answers, but they're contemplating how to apply Prabhupada's instruction in establishing Varnashram within ISKCON, because one of the views that I've heard a number of times is it's not for devotees, not for ISKCON devotees, because our program is Bhagavad Dharma, and those that aren't prepared for Bhagavad, to take up Bhagavad Dharma, they can take up, you know, the safety net, the Varnashram Dharma, safety net, just in case you slip and fall, or just I don't have an interest in Bhagavad Dharma. There's Varnashram Dharma. Daivi Varnashram Dharma, but it's not for ISKCON devotees. And it seems that there are some times when Prabhupada said some things like that, and then there's very clearly times when Prabhupada said it's for ISKCON and to show the world. Maybe then there's the middle of the road people that would say, well, we're supposed to show by example, but it's not really meant for us. Because we do Bhagavad Dharma, it's so we can show the world how to do the other one in case they're not interested in Bhagavad Dharma. In short, we became inspired. Well, actually, here's a little history. Every year for the past 4 or 5 years, there's been a summer gathering of the GBCs of North America and a few other people that are working closely with the GBCs of North America in Chicago. And I volunteered to consider topics that are the North American GBCs could speak on, have it recorded as well as presented live so that the world of ISKCON, at least our North American members in ISKCON, could hear from their local leaders on topics that seemed relevant for our lives as it practicing ISKCON devotees hear from their GBC on some relevant topics. Different things. Leadership, education, Western outreach, etc. So one of those was Varnashram. And I requested Anutra Prabhu and somebody else, because there are sometimes two speakers. So the way that Anutama spoke about the topic, from his understanding of the topic, it was then posted on a YouTube recording on Dandavas, and Shivaram Rush heard it and said, whoa, you know, I have a different view. He said, well, we'll invite you to speak on your different view. You're a GBC member, and it was arranged. It was a live presentation in a recording studio in Budapest. This was summer of 2015, I think. And I was so impressed and enlivened by his presentation. I said, wow. I called him up and said, wow. You've thought a lot about this, and it's really, I don't necessarily agree with everything that you've said, but it's really interesting what you said. So would you be interested to come to the United States, because our meetings are in August, September the next year? So he agreed. He wasn't able to make it because he was in South India just before that. He got some kind of infection in his leg and was in the hospital, and the doctor said you can't travel. So it was done with a recording from Tirupati. He was out of the hospital by that time, and so they did a video recording that didn't cut, the quality wasn't so good. But he, along with other speakers, Abhiram was visited with Deva Madhava several times. Shared what instructions he received from Prabhupada on the topic. And different speakers, Raj Bihari was concerned that, whoa, we should have a balanced presentation because sometimes it can get into, this side versus that side kind of thing. And, you know, the ISKCON Resolve concern is, let's not go there. Let's have a balanced presentation. So he was there as the moderator and facilitator and different speakers. Tukaram, some of you don't know Tukaram, but he's our president in Laguna Beach. And one of his special gifts is he's really good at research. Really, really good at research. So he has researched what Prabhupada said on the subject of Varnashram. Take anything that's controversial, and he's researched it, and he knows that the big picture, not just what this point of view and that point of view, but the big picture. And then kind of distills the big picture down to essences and He made a nice presentation. Kaunteya Prabhu, similarly, and other speakers, without the detail. So this nice rendering of the topic. It wasn't like we're going to make conclusive statements about, rather it was exploring. That was Labor Day weekend, I think it was 2016. Is that right? Yeah, 2016. Some time passed, and at this most recent GBC meeting, three times, independently, the topic came up. And I happened to have the pleasure of sitting next to Devamrita Swami, and he and I had some discussion on the topic. It came out of in a conversation at our GBC table about some verses from Narada Muni from Canto 7, Chapter 11. So before Chapter 11 is Chapter 10. And a whole series of verses from the middle of Canto 7 through Chapter 10 is this topic of Prahlad Maharaj hearing from Narada in the womb of Kayadu, and he's born, and Prahlad's teachings to his classmates, and his interaction with Hiranyakashipu, and Lord Nrisimhadeva appears, and prayers by Prahlad to Lord Nrisimhadeva, and their exchange, their loving exchange back and forth. So hearing all this, the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, a very natural question starts Chapter 11, which is coming from Maharaj Ambarish, because Maharaj Ambarish is hearing all this Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrisimhadeva narration from Narada, because Narada serves as a spiritual master of the Pandavas. And Yudhisthira wants to know how to be a qualified king. So the qualified king must know how to lead his citizens to the goal of life, must know what the goal of life is, and how to organize the citizens of all the different orders of society in such a manner that it's progressive towards the goal of life. Other things also are included, but progressive towards the goal of life. So he asks the question, wow, how does one become like that? How does one reach that stage of perfection, being engaged in devotional service that's unmixed, as Prahlad was unmixed, such that the society can achieve that? And then he specifically says, what are the four varnas and ashrams and how to organize them? So that question at the beginning of Chapter 11 leads to three or four chapters of answer of that one question. And when the response comes from Narada, Narada first of all says, before I speak, I want to offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You've asked such a wonderful question because it's for the welfare of all. Such a saintly person as you, Maharaj Yudhisthira, would be interested in the welfare of all. And I'll give you the response that I heard from Narayana directly. And Narayana of the Narayana Rishi, he heard from him. And there's further detail about all of that in Mahabharata, the Narayaniya section of Mahabharata in Shantiparva, Moksha Dharma section of Shantiparva. So it just mentions, I heard directly from Narayana, I'll give you the essence. And then he begins, so you might want to look this up later, Canto 7, Chapter 11, Texts 8 through 12. It gives 30 principles. 21 of them are human principles to live by, that everyone should live by, and then the other 9 of the 30 are the 9 processes of bhakti. It's slightly different listing than found earlier in the 7th canto, where Prahlad Maharaj says to Hiranyakashipu what the 9 principles, the best thing he learned is not in the school of Sanda and Amarika, it's what he learned from Narada, the processes of bhakti, which are 9 in number, and he lists them. So Narada again lists them, slightly different language, but the same 9 angas of bhakti. And then there's 21. And in the explanation that's given is, before you can begin it's not so, you know, cut and dry like this. I'm describing it in simple language. Before you can take up varnashram, which leads to devotional service, which leads to pure bhakti, which leads to shelter at the lotus feet of the personality Godhead in the spiritual world, before that you have to become human. So there's the bottom of the pyramid is the unregulated everybody. They don't follow anything. They follow hedonism. No, nothing coming down. Just, if it feels good, do it, like an animal. And then there are those that become human. And the teaching is that there's basic activities in the education system in the West, and to some extent also in India. It goes by different euphemisms, like value education, character education, and things like that. Because, at least in the West, there's separation of church and state. You can't talk about God. You can have it in a religion class, but you can't talk about become, you know, a God-centered person in a public school. It's against the Constitution of the United States. At least it's read that way. Prabhupada doesn't agree that was what the founders intended. You can't favor this one versus that one, but you can't leave God out of education. How can you do that? It's a big topic. It leads to all kinds of ugliness without... All kinds of anecdotal information, but to share, on the one side, Prabhupada's teaching, real education is character development. Academics, okay. The real education is character development. Because when someone has character, a young boy, young girl, a young bodied soul has character, it's very easy to give them something valuable and have them use it properly. If you give, on the other hand, if someone doesn't have character, give them something valuable, they can use it in a very detrimental way. And this is going on, as Prabhupada would say. Technology in the hand of a person without character is a very dangerous thing. And this is going on. On the other hand, how can you have character that endures when there's no foundation, there's no spiritual core? The answer is, you don't. It's a behavior that's circumstantial, and when the circumstances aren't conducive to that behavior, the behavior disappears. You follow? Now you see it, now you don't. The opposite is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Ahoitakiya pratinata yayatma supersede. Devotional service that's without hetu, something on this end that's the cause, and a pratiyata, that there's nothing that can stop it. It's not created, bhakti isn't created by circumstance, it arises from the soul. Circumstance can't create it or check it. It arises from the soul. And when there's the spiritual consciousness is awakened, character is naturally there. No harm, in fact, it's in Narada's teachings, we encourage character, but character is not just a behavior. Just like all over the world, I've noticed as I travel, parents want to teach their children to say please and thank you. But to teach gratitude, not just the behavior of saying please and thank you, is a whole other thing. Those of you that are parents know what I'm talking about. And you're successful if you can transmit such things as character and compassion, gratitude and compassion and truthfulness, not just when it's convenient, but just a fundamental value of truthfulness or charity or other, you know, good qualities. It rests on something that's more than a behavior. Behaviors help give a path to follow, but that's not the essence. And I'm just repeating myself here. Without the essence, it becomes and it goes. It's circumstantial. When you as parents are no longer around and the child is now a young adult, is that same behavior going to be there? Uncertain. If there's character, it's certain. And if the character is resting upon a spiritual core, it's unflinching. It doesn't come and go. That's education, that's parenting, that's being whatever, head of state. In this case, it's Maharaj Yudhisthira, duty of a king. But anyone is in that position of senior and subordinate, or whatever the right language is these days that works for you. You're extending care to another. We're getting some hand signals that some people are coming in the back. Can we all move forward and just do it one time rather than all kinds of hand signals? So which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which comes first, human quality or Krishna consciousness? When Srila Prabhupada came to the Boston Harbor and was writing his nice poem to Krishna, and then other writings in his diary, the experience was mission impossible. How are these people who are filled with the mode of ignorance and passion going to be able to understand Shuddha-sattva, knowledge? How is it going to be possible? But let me try. There's that nice recording with that video showing the skyline of the Boston Harbor. Let me try. And his faith was in the process of Bhagavad Dharma, the Bhagavad Marg, hearing the message of Krishna. And that's what he did. He didn't give rules and regulations in the beginning. He gave himself. He gave his association. And his association was through different means, according to the individuals. Certainly, kirtan and prasadam and some basic teachings. And after some time of kirtan, prasadam, and some basic teachings, there's this historic day when Brahmananda, who was, and the title was president of 26 Second Avenue, asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, shouldn't there be some regulations? And Prabhupada's answer was yes. I'll give them tomorrow. And then in his handwriting on that bulletin board that was right by the entrance of 26 Second Avenue, the famous four regular principles. Before that, there was no four regular principles. Because they were ready for it and they asked for it, he gave it. And then it became, you know, in the course of time, it's standard. But that's not where it began. It began with, you know, the chicken. They made the egg. The bhakti, the seed of bhakti, was awakened. Because it's already there, was just awakened by his association in the various forms. Sadhu Sangha. And then through passage of time, the development of the activities of Bhagavad Dharma. And then Prabhupada saying, 50% of my mission is incomplete. So that's, you know, the organizing of society according to the standards of Varnashram. So here in Narada's teachings, I'll read it. If I can find it. We're going to get to the housewarming in just a minute, I promise you. This is text 7 and then the beginning part of text 8 from chapter 11, Narada to Yudhisthira. Well, it, you know, keeps sagging. If you do that, it just, watch, this thing starts going, ooh. So I put it up here so that when it sags, it's but in a normal place again. It's an interesting exercise. Okay. The Supreme Being, this is Narada speaking, the personality of Godhead is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. Oh, King Yudhisthira, the principles of religion, this principle of religion, is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Text 8 through 12 begins. These are the general principles to be followed by all human beings. 21, and then another 9, Bhagavad Dharma. O King Yudhisthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, on the one hand, and on the other hand, it's one of these, you know, you have to get the big picture. On the one hand, this is going to satisfy the Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, it's insufficient just to have human qualities. Because, so, the one hand is, the real, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his talks with Ramananda Roy, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, what's the goal of life, and how to achieve it? So one of the offerings was, follow Varnashram, because it's the way to satisfy the personality of Godhead. Oh, it's external. Say something more. Because it's, the external isn't the essence. The essence is Krishna consciousness, and how do you get Krishna consciousness? Not just by being a human being and having these nice qualities. You can't have these nice qualities in a sustained fashion without Krishna consciousness. You need Krishna consciousness. That's the essence. But it helps you. It helps. It's using a simple metaphor. It's like having wet wood and making wet wood dry so you can ignite it. You have to have dry wood to have a fire. You can't have a fire with wet wood. So how do you get the fire, the wood, dry? You do what Prabhupada did. Distribution of prasadam and kirtan and teachings from Bhagavad Gita and so forth. And give your saintly association. And the wet wood becomes dry and says, you know, how do we ignite? Well, I'm giving you the process to ignite, but you also have to become regulated and civilized and, you know, a human being. They're already being engaged in Bhagavad Dharma, but it helps one become a qualified practitioner of bhakti to be a human being. So it's not one to the exclusion of the other exactly, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. They're meant to go together. And the way that Narada is presenting it, and now back to our GBC meeting, the way that Shivaram Maharaj was saying is, what we're doing in Hungary, you know the kind of literatures he writes. You have to get your binoculars out to like, whoa, very high literature. And he's also writing these literatures on Varnashram Dharma. Why? Because that's what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted us to do this. So he shared with, he gave him 45 minutes of attentive GBC time and 15 minutes of discussion to give a little summary, and what part of the little summary was these same 8 through 12 Canto 7, Chapter 11 verses. That in Hungary this year, they're dedicating the entire year, not just because he said it, it's because they're committed to becoming clear how to be qualified devotees that can show by example and live by example Varnashram. So to help them become qualified to become Shuddha Bhaktas. They're dedicating the whole year to these points, how to become human. And I heard it from Devamrita Maharaj also, you know, from his exchanges with Shivaram Maharaj. And so I sent, from our GBC meeting in Mayapur, I sent to the temples that I'm GBC for, please consider, for your Sunday lectures, covering these points. Because, you know, it's pretty universal how to become a human being. So that you can become then elevated in spiritual consciousness. You know, value education, that you don't have to leave God out. But God's in. In fact, he's at the foundation, exactly as Narada is saying. He's the foundation of all, of everything, including good qualities, good character. So, when I visited St. Louis, they said, well, you were suggesting we could have it for our Sunday lecture. Can you speak about it? So I'll read the some of the 21, a few of the 21, and immediately those of you that have read Bhagavad Gita, you'll recall what Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita about qualities of a brahmana. Samadhamaptapakshocham, shantir, arjavam evacha, gyanam vigyanam, astikyam, brahmakarma svabhavajam. Those characteristics of a brahmana. Or, those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita and know, in chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna asks, what is knowledge? And same, 8 through 12, Krishna says, these are items of knowledge. And they're all qualities, the same qualities, or essentially the same qualities. That's knowledge. And so knowledge isn't just what you know, it's that you read the qualities and it's who you are. That's knowledge. Amanitvam, adambitvam, it's how it starts. Humility and pridelessness. Etc. These are qualities. Krishna is calling them knowledge. Here Narada is calling them essential principles of a human being. It's the dry wood that can ignite to become the fire of bhakti. Little sharing. I can't even remember the circumstance exactly. I was somewhere, and there was the elderly lady that had a cane and. Or a walker or something like that, and she was kind of really slowly moving, and was looking for a place to sit, and there was a young Chinese man, like student age kind of age, and he saw that she was struggling, and he immediately stood up and offered his seat so that she could have a seat. It was an Amtrak train. Because there's no seating assignments in an Amtrak train. And most of the seats were full, and she was looking for a place to sit. He immediately got up and had her sit, and she was looking at him saying, "Where are you going to sit?" I mean, there was some rows ahead of me. "Where are you going to sit?" He said, "I don't know, but you should sit." And my thought immediately went to, this is culture. So one of the appreciations I have in visiting China is there's still some culture. And that makes it easier for the wood to ignite. Because there's culture. And then, you know, come here to America and my language is the culture of no culture. And you know it better than I do from your perspective of at least those of you born in India and have some culture, and it's like shocking. Without details. And those of you that have children, your children are exposed to that culture of no culture. And so what to do as parents when you want your kids to get a good education and you send them to a place where there's no culture? The culture of no culture. What are you going to do? Well, you have to have culture in your home. The culture in the home is not just do's and don'ts. It's not just behaviors. It's character. It's like it's spiritual value. It's big mission. Passing on from the present generation to the next generation. And it's not, you know, it's the parents and it's everybody. It's the community. That one of the many phrases that Bhakti Tirtha Swami spoke, I like very much and repeat again and again and try to live by it. And that is, to raise a child, it takes a village. I mean, obviously the parents are the most important entities or persons in the life of a child growing up. But it's not just the parents, because the child growing up is exposed to the village. You know, the elders and the peers and the uncles and the everybody else's. And that helps to develop character, or at least behavior. But also, you know, the deeper message of character. So therefore, this Varnashram topic, it's not abstract, it's very practical in terms of start with becoming a human being, and you know, or in other terms, items of knowledge or character that has a spiritual foundation. So after this chapter 11 comes chapter 12. Imagine that. And then 12 and 13 and 14. And there's discussion further on the different ashrams. And one of them that's discussed is the Grihastha ashram. So that's how what we're doing this evening connects with what I wanted to speak about. So let's do it again. There's the unregulated everybody, you know, the bottom of the pyramid, people that don't follow anything other than if it feels good, do it. That was when I was in college, and now it's just do it.
Somehow they went lower.
Well, it's implicit, you know. Don't even have to say it if it feels good, just do it. So then, according to what Prabhupada has taught again and again, human society begins by acceptance of the system of varnashram, that you regulate your activities according to codes of dharma. And one of those codes of dharma is given by Bhagavan. I was in Texas A&M earlier this week, last week, Thursday last week. And one student came up, you know, 15-minute discussion. He comes from an Orthodox family in South India, and da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, so many ideas out there, what a dharma. And now in college over here, it's like, you know, Christian values and Muslim values and varieties of Muslims and varieties of Christians, varieties of, how do you know? It was a nice discussion. Then he went to another devotee and asked another. So, inquisitive young man, but it, you know, there has to be. There's scripture, and then different people read scripture, and we understand scripture through the Mahajans, Mahajana Yena Katasa Panta, and you know, different persons read what the Mahajans say in a different way. So you need disciplic succession. You need a tattvadarshi that's in disciplic succession, hearing from the Mahajans that have a proper understanding of Bhagavan and Bhagavad Dharma. Dharmam hi sakshat Bhagavat pranitam. How many times have we heard that from Prabhupada? And it's directly in the Bhagavatam. So we need this disciplic succession, and we need role models. We need exemplars of the teachings. We have to be that in order to teach. You can't give values, you can't give knowledge, you can't give anything that you don't have. Parents, please understand. And grihasthas, this section, I'm just going to read a few verses. Narada's explaining, after, you know, the unregulated, they're regulated by the codes of the Vedas because they've cultivated, the language here by Narada is cultivating these principles. That's the first part. These are general principles to be followed by all human beings, that's everybody, before it gets specialized in varna and ashram. That's above. Become human first, become the follower of your particular psychophysical nature, varna and ashram. These 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. So how to acquire them, not to the exclusion of Bhagavad Dharma, it helps you put the wood, the wet wood, near a fire, it's going to dry. Take these people that Prabhupada was introducing to Krishna consciousness and build a fire. Nama Yajna. Just like we had a fire in the middle of the living room here. Maybe this is the dining room, I don't know. The fire room. And it helps make the wet wood dry. It helps the human qualities to be manifest. To awaken, to come out, based on awakening of Krishna consciousness. Not one to the exclusion of the other. Not you have to have a chicken before you have eggs, and you have to have eggs before you have a chicken. You can do them both. But then, what are the, this is now the Varnashram topic, how to be proper grihasthas according to Narada's instructions. We can't go back into Vedic times and do everything, you know, to read the chapter on Vanaprastha, my goodness. You get spooked. But there's principles that are to be understood and how to apply the principles according to our current circumstance. So here's just going to read a few verses from chapter 14. Narada's going up the pyramid a little bit, and he's going to speak about grihasthas. So this is housewarming event. How to manasa deha geha yokichu mora. How to dedicate body, mind, words, home, family, everything to Krishna's service. So that's the spirit of grihastha life. And then here's some of the principles. I'll just read a little bit from the last part of the purport of text 1, chapter 14. According to the instructions of Rishabdev, Prabhupada is referring to Tapo Divyam Putraka. Rishabdev is instructing his sons, don't become self-indulgent. Prepare your lives for tapa. Here's Prabhupada. Rishabdev to his sons, we should not create a so-called comfortable situation, but must prepare to undergo austerity. So following grihastha life is vanaprastha life, and following vanaprastha sannyas life, and we should understand what's down the road for us if we're going to be successful in the varnashram system and successful as grihastha devotees. So just a few verses. Not so much discussion, the verses speak for themselves. My dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to earn their livelihood, and instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer the results to Krishna. Vasudev. How to satisfy Vasudev in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. Nice purport. Next text. A grihastha must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these activities are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus, one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. Doesn't mean, you know, you listen to the Bhagavatam long enough and you just don't care about anybody anymore. That's not the meaning. It's the undue attachment, or the identifying the self in terms of the body and the interaction of body to body and the attachment that comes as a result of a lack of Krishna consciousness, that kind of consciousness. Next, while working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. There's a nice verse amongst 18,000 other nice verses in the Bhagavatam spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, where he says something quite similar, almost the same. The person who is a really good candidate for bhakti is not too much attached and not too much detached. Not too much detached means the artificial renunciation, or the impersonalist who says everything is nothing and give it up, and not too much attached. But so in that space of not too much or too much, then I can engage stuff in service to the Supreme, who's the controller of stuff and the proprietor, with that consciousness of devotion, not too much attached, accepting, not too much unattached or detached. That's the good fertile ground for bhakti, a good candidate for bhakti. So this verse, Narada is saying, acting as if detached, as if attached, but not attached. Carrying out your duties in a very responsible manner, but not attached to thinking that's it. Manaseva Bhagavan Seva. Or my work is my worship. Or all those other slogans that people have. An intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. That's Bhagavad Marg, but it's being spoken of in terms of Varnashram, a Grihastha principle. You know, Nivritti, progressive detachment from the temporary by progressive attachment to the eternal. That's Bhagavad Marg. And Grihastha duty or principle, a principle to live by along with being human, you follow this principle, it'll help your spiritual elevation. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, yes, yes, that is all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. Does that ring a bell for anybody? Oh. And it goes on. So, things that come from the Supreme are to be dedicated to the Supreme. These teachings, Ideal Family Life is the title of the chapters, whole chapter, those of you that are interested, right there in the Bhagavatam. And the principles that are being expressed here are found in the very beginning stages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto tayopakalpate. One should not take up dharma with the purpose of increasing sense gratification. Rather, one should take up dharma for the purpose of apavarga, ultimate liberation. And then there's like a checkmate. Then, well, supposing something does come because you've done your dharma nicely. Never utilize that in sense gratification. Well, I didn't do it on purpose, but look at all this resource that's coming my way. Hari Bol. No. Just like, here's a nice house. And, you know, the family was living in something other than this house before, so now that's a reward for doing nice chanting and devotional service, and now I have a nice house. So the nice house is not meant for sense gratification, it's meant for dedication to service of the Supreme Lord. Nartasya dharma kantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. The goal is to remember Krishna and to dedicate whatever comes to the service of Krishna. So if you have, you dedicate it to Krishna. If you don't have, you don't lament because you don't have. You just accept whatever is a practical arrangement for service to Krishna. It sounds nice. And it is nice. And to live our lives in that, according to that principle, that's where the struggle is. Because we're conditioned souls and we have desires, and you get the object that matches the desire, it's well. It's easy to just, like dominoes, just become the enjoyer of the object because the desire is there. And to not become the enjoyer of the object, although the object is there, that requires character. And that to have character sustained requires Krishna consciousness. It requires a spiritual court. One last thing. Please pardon me for speaking too much. I had a very nice experience. Riding in planes isn't always a nice experience. People ask, how was the flight, Maharaj? It was unpleasant. Sitting in a tin can flying at 500 miles an hour and breathing the same air that everybody else is breathing over and over again. It's not lovely. It's an austerity, but it's an austerity for service to Krishna. It's nice, everything's okay. In that particular flight from Houston, Texas to St. Louis, there was a middle-aged lady, mid-50s or so, from Brazil. And she was the kind of lady that wanted to talk, so she was like right away, are you with a religious organization? What's that religious organization? And it was a nice discussion. She was saying, I'm from Brazil, and I've not been to the United States, although she was reading a book in English. And so she was had good command of the English language. She said, I've never experienced the kind of materialism that I just experienced for 5 days. Not like there isn't materialism in Brazil, but it's, it just looks different. And it's less in your face. In Texas, sense gratification is in your face. And she said, it's apparent that people aren't happy. Although they have that materialism, they have the objects that we don't, they're not happy. And many, many other things. She said, you do teachings. Do you give teachings that explain how to overcome that materialism, and what replaces it, and how do you get there? I mean, it was like very interesting discussion. I accept everything that you're saying. I was explaining to her the topics that I was sharing in the previous time that I was spent in Texas. So this, it's very interesting, but does it really work? And so I said, I'd like you to read Bhagavad Gita. It's where this wisdom comes from is Bhagavad Gita. It's an ABC literature. It's not too difficult. It's introductory, and there's further and further, but I'll send you, I'll make sure that you get a copy in Portuguese if you just give me an address where to send it to. And so she took my email address. She hasn't written yet, but when the light's on, even if one doesn't have knowledge, when the wood is somewhat dry but not ignited yet, it's not difficult to ignite, because how to get to the place where there's the alternative to materialism. There has to be a spiritual core. And how do you get that spiritual core? Well, it's already there. It just has to be awakened. So this principle, this section of the Bhagavatam is a real good section. The whole topic of Varnashram is a real good topic. To understand what it is and how it applies to us, it will help our bhakti. It's not the essence of bhakti. It'll help our bhakti to be human, to act appropriately to our ashram and our varna. And all of that rests on the awakening of Krishna consciousness, the awakening of Krishna, say it the other way, awakening of Krishna consciousness is assisted by being human. What was Prabhupada doing? He was inviting people to go to the topmost floor of the Empire State Building, and they had no qualification. Come to Shuddha Bhakti from people that don't take a bath. Etc. That was the situation, that some of the people that were coming, there were squatters in the Lower East Side, and there was just like an empty space, and they stayed in the empty space, and there's no running water, and there's no brush their teeth, and where they use for a toilet, I don't know, and whether they use for bathing, I don't know. So they would go visit somebody that had a bathroom and take a bath sometimes. Anyway, you get the idea. Big challenge. So take that picture and, you know, expand it to the world that we live in, and our we're to, you know, the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and give the holy name and spread love of God, and the audience is, you know, unregulated and not yet human. And to some extent, you read these qualifications very carefully. They're principles to be cultivated, and we can all do better in many of these principles, most of these principles, if not all of the principles, to some extent, and then there's room for improvement for sure. Very valuable instruction, and helping us to fulfill the order of our founder Acharya. Hare Krishna. Any comments, discussion? Yes?
Maharaj, is there a difference between Vedic culture and Indian culture?
Yeah.
And how do we...
Well, Vedic culture is when Krishna sees Nanda Maharaj has made this elaborate arrangement for a yajna, he asks his father, is this enjoined in the Vedas or is it family tradition? It doesn't say family tradition, chuck it. But, you know, Vedic is to be followed. And it doesn't, that carries much greater weight than family tradition. And a lot of, not always, but a lot of what's Indian culture is tradition. Ask people, what's the scriptural basis and support for this? They don't know. My grandmother did it. And that doesn't mean it's a zero. But it's not Vedic culture. There may be vestiges of Vedic culture that over generations has become something quite different than what the Vedas enjoined. Nor is it done in pursuance of Narayana, the source of the Vedas. I make that distinction between the two.
I was raised, I would say, in Indian culture.
Mm.
But I think we're trying to adopt and imbibe Vedic culture.
Yeah.
And sometimes...
Well, even within Vedic culture, then there's divisions of Vedic culture. We're trying to adopt Bhagavad Dharma as given to us by our predecessor Acharyas, and most immediately by ISKCON's founder Acharya, who was a very strict follower of Bhaktisiddhanta, who was a very strict follower of Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So they're the ones who take, what I'm saying here is, there's principle and then there's detail. We're trying to adopt Vedic culture, or pursue Vedic culture, but more specifically, Bhagavad Dharma. That slice of Vedic culture, because Vedic culture is very, very broad, including all kinds of procedures, rituals, and observances that we don't follow because that part of Bhagavad Dharma, that part of the teaching that Krishna encourages us in Bhagavad Gita, although it's part of Vedic culture, some of those things, many of those things. The Karmakanda ritual section of the Vedas. Yeah.
You had given the example of your experience in China and how if there is culture, then it's easier to ignite fire.
Yes.
How should we, and if so, how can we sort of help to others to take on, adopt culture?
Well, by being good examples. You can teach others by being, by both achar and prachar, but the strongest of the two is achar. And then your message carries weight because of your the example you set. Making that comment doesn't mean there are not people outside of India and China that have culture. There are people. There are people that maybe it's just, you know, from a previous lifetime or whatever. They're born and raised in the West and they ignite very quickly. And there's the opposite people that are born in both of those other places and they don't know, they, you know, they're difficult people. Yes.
Mara, is it necessary that you need to move from Grihastha Ashram to Vanastha Ashram and then to Sannyas, or you can end your life at a Grihastha Ashram?
Thank you for asking the question. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam and according to repeated instruction of our founder Acharya, it's imperative. Now, what that looks like is really unclear. The principle is the comforts of home, the comforts, you know, the fulfillment of the duty as a grihastha of earning livelihood and providing a place for children and all of the things that, you know, parenting and all of that, step away from it and move into another phase of life that's more focused on visiting places of pilgrimage and hearing from saintly people and more deeply studying the scripture and not continuing forever to be involved in earning livelihood and so forth. Performing a different function of varnaprastha. Vanaprastha literally means go to the forest. But leave the comforts of home. And voluntarily accept austerities that are not the product of your hard work as a grihastha, and so you can live comfortably. But purposely, directionally, moving in the direction of voluntarily accepting less, or, you know, whatever, inconveniences, bodily inconveniences, for the sake of spiritual elevation, go in that direction in your life, with less and less. So it may be, you know, some I've seen do this for periods of time, that the wife remains at home and the husband goes to, or the husband and the wife go to holy places. And so it's just, you know, the model is not clear, but it's imperative to move in that direction for progressive spiritual life. Now, I'm thinking of conversations I've had with godbrothers who are, they're continuing in their marriage, they're not taking sannyas, but they're not so involved with their grandchildren, and they have grandchildren. They're playing the function of the grandfather, grandmother to their grandchildren, but it's not what they're immersed in. It's a service function, but the direction of the life is deepening their involvement in those things mentioned, living simply, purposefully, Prabhupada spoke about his struggle. This is Prabhupada, not, you know, you. Prabhupada spoke about his struggle of becoming free from family attachment. Now, and that was when it was, without the detail, what his wife was up to was insulting. It's me or tea, and she chose tea. So, you know, he went to Vrindavan. But then to take the sannyas vows, he felt not qualified. Anyway, he describes this, not so much in his books, but in conversations. Does that help?
I was looking for a different answer, but it helped.
It's a direction. It's not, you know, it's a 10 or a 0. Nivritti. And it's a stage where that nivritti gets special attention. And progressively. And the purpose isn't just denial, it's increase spiritual absorption, because during the grihastha stage of life, there's a lot of worldly absorption. Of necessity, to be a proper householder, you have to. You'd be irresponsible unless you're, you know, Sudama Brahman or something, that, you know, that whatever comes of its own accord, that's all. So, so now, it's a detoxification phase, or a decompression chamber, that's probably better, where the tendency to become attached to the temporary is reduced. The tendency to become attached to something that's, quote, comfortable or feels good, towards the side of, it's a little uncomfortable. On the material side, not just because it hurts, but so that I can focus more. Not in an artificial way, because then I'm not focusing more, I'm just doing something artificial. But move in that direction in life. Vana prastha. Yes?
I was wondering when you were speaking about the principles of being a grihastha. And not being, to live a simple life and not to be too entangled in particular things or making your life specifically cumbersome, to only make as much as you need.
Yes.
And I was thinking, on one end there's the example of a very sattvic sort of village life, which often becomes the idealistic model of varnashram. And then there's the side of normal American culture, which generally requires a car and so much money and so many things. And so then it becomes easy to say that I need the bigger house, I need more money, I need this and that just for my basic whatevers. So how do you actually know what is the blueprint of a life that is not too entangled or too cumbersome when you have these two extremes?
Well, I would add another complexity to what you just described, and that is being relatable to the audience you're trying to reach. If you're a Spartan and they're, you know, the other end of the spectrum, they can't relate. Even you may have something of value to share. I know a family, without the detail, they were happy to have, like, you know, a home that didn't have, you know, comforts, comfortable furniture and so on. And people that came to their home, well, where do we sit? So they got some furniture because they wanted to introduce people to Krishna consciousness and feel comfortable. That wasn't for their comfort, it was for the sake of reaching people who, so they could be relatable to people that they were reaching to. So that's another dimension in addition to what you mentioned. A short answer is there's a sliding scale. What for one person is necessity, for another person is luxury. Not a necessity. But, you know, for some person, that luxury is a necessity. They can't be peaceful without it. Now, so the sliding scale is be peaceful, you know, be contented. So where's the line, is your question. And it depends on the consciousness of the individual. The line for someone may be this, and the line for someone may be that. And if one is, you know, just somehow or another very sincere and serious to reach the goal of Krishna consciousness and be relatable to others that you're reaching out to in Krishna consciousness, both, then in that person's life, it should move, it should be, they could be peaceful in their present circumstance and be wishing to move the fulcrum towards the side of less without compromising being relatable.
So there's one other part I was thinking about in relation to this is when you do community development, when you're working with a variety of different people who are on the sliding scale,
yes,
then I find that it also is easy to become resentful of others who need more than what you do and then think that you actually need more. It sort of tends to go the opposite direction.
Well, therefore, know thyself. You know, being realistic with this is where I am and this is, you know, this is to be in a balanced space of, you know, vibrant Krishna consciousness, this matches my needs. And I'm not comparing myself to others or vice versa. I'm better or, you know, they're better or something. And then feel shame because I'm not better or something. Just, it's where I am and it's what I require to be in a strong position of vigorously carrying forward my personal life and being part of the mission of the community. It, you know, it's work. I call it brahminical work. It's an internal cultivation of introspection and being satisfied with what my position is while I'm then moving to the next position. We gave one of the Gita Nagari retreats was on this topic, acceptance and progress. And acceptance of others and acceptance of myself. It starts with acceptance of myself. And then progress, go the next step. Not just be complacent, but go the next step. Not a doable step, not some Herculean, unrealistic, unsustainable step. Towards Krishna. I want to be closer to Krishna. It's like this, you know, it's similar to this question about, you know, the Vanaprastha stage after Grihastha stage. It doesn't have to be radical, it's just principle, directional. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Your class is so appropriate for what we were talking about. Obviously, my wife's also asking some more questions.
You have a soft voice.
Not always. playing devil's advocate.
Okay.
Some might.
I'll be the angel, you be the devil.
I'm not very good at that, Maharaj.
I'm not very good at being an angel either.
There's a side that would say, or that have said to me when I've had these conversations with them, that you're making bhakti dependent on some social or moralistic principle, and bhakti's independent, and so you're contaminating the situation. Chant and be happy. So, you've responded to it in so many ways, but if somebody were to directly ask you that question, What
would the angel say?
Not necessarily.
If you're Shukadev Goswami, that's sufficient. And if you're not Shukadev Goswami, you may need some assistance. you could expand on that principle, but yes, the power of bhakti is such, nothing else is needed. The power of bhakti is sufficient. And for the rest of us, we accept things that help bhakti. It doesn't contaminate bhakti, it helps. And our founder Acharya wanted us, seeing the necessity, not just show example, but seeing the necessity in us, the principle of faith in the holy name and the potency of pure devotional service is something that he transmitted because he had it, he transmitted it. And then he wanted us to understand, and this will also help us. So it's not, I've said it in two different ways, here's the third way. We don't put the cart before the horse, we keep the horse in front of the cart, and the horse pulls the cart. And the horse is hearing and chanting, is Bhagavad Dharma. So the horse is pulling the cart. The cart, we want the load of the cart to match what the horse can do. And we have to have human characteristics. Supposing, you know, go through this list and I'm the opposite of what this list says. I'm not a good example of Prabhupada. Or I'm not going to be able to, by bad example of these 21 opposite of qualities, carry forward and very long and effectively in the bhakti process. I'll be an embarrassment, a blemish, a black eye in the face of bhakti. So I need these qualities, and it's pleasing to Krishna to have these qualities. It's not a contamination or a compromise or a whitewash. It's part and parcel of. So, exactly as Prabhupada did, he gave the, you know, that he gave the chicken before he gave the egg. He gave the bhakti process before he gave this. Here comes, you know, same as Shukadeva Goswami. It's not until the seventh canto that he's speaking about this topic at such length. After so many instructions on the importance of devotional service, and included in this section is, you know, devotional service or sadhu sangha. So it's not a compromise. It's not a whatever the other language was. It's not diminishing or covering or minimizing the power of bhakti. It's an assist. Without the power of bhakti, it's nothing. With bhakti, It can assist bhakti. It's an attendant. Yes?
Maharaj, just wanted to get clarification on this point. The character is coming from the Krishna consciousness practice, or it is separate?
It comes from Krishna. It comes from Krishna. And we connect with Krishna through the bhakti process, and then Krishna decorates us. That's if it's spiritual. The other is a behavior that's just the modes of nature, and it comes and it goes, like the modes of nature. Okay. You want to add anything?
Class in St. Louis also.
You did? Were you in St. Louis?
No, I was watching.
Really? Well, hallelujah.
I was grateful that you continued the process.
Well, it's just the later chapter. That was chapter 11, and just kind of the background in chapter 14. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.